friends, it's Abby Feeder, certified life and fertility coach, and you're listening to The Fertility Chick. This show is all about the path to parenthood, which is never the same for everyone, and our guests' professional success along the way. Did you know that March is Surrogacy Awareness Month? Unless you're in the infertility community, I'm guessing you did not know that. I barely even knew that until I went through infertility myself. We've had so many incredible stories about parents, intended parents who were lucky enough to find and use a surrogate to start or build their families. But we hadn't heard yet from a gestational carrier, and I really wanted to talk to somebody that had been through that process. So today you're going to hear from Rachel, who gave the miracle of an altruistic, meaning an unpaid surrogacy, to her very dear friend, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Here's Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Abby.
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm so happy you're here.
So nice to be here.
We've never had an episode about surrogacy from the perspective of the gestational carrier. And as I mentioned, March is National Surrogacy Awareness Month. So I'm very grateful that you are here to kick us off. And you really have just a beautiful story. So you have three children of your own. And then once your family felt complete, you always knew you wanted to do this for someone. So tell me where that feeling came from.
Yeah, so I just knew in my heart that when I was done having my own babies, that I wanted to be a surrogate. I think some of it came from sitting with my friends who had been through so much grief, and too many of my closest friends who had babies who died in pregnancy or born stillborn or went through infertility and miscarriage. And I had these amazing pregnancies. Like my body just worked. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I didn't really do anything to be given that gift. And I appreciated it. I mean, I definitely didn't, I never really took it for granted. In my pregnancies, I did a ton of yoga and I was going to acupuncture and I did as much as I could to really truly enjoy it, despite always having this, I don't know, like knowing so many stories.
Yeah.
And I had like my own little scares, but nothing that ever turned into anything. And I liked giving birth. And I mean, like giving birth. I think like I love the journey of it, right? It definitely was not fun, but yeah. You know, obviously it worked, my body worked. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 36, I was walking in the Arboretum for my birthday with a couple of friends. It was 2015. And now I'm, now you know.
Dating yourself. Yeah.
Yes, I'm dating myself. Which is like, I feel like it's part of the story, right?
Yeah,
like I felt like I had this one chance because I mean, already I was AMA, advanced maternal age.
Sure.
It was the first time that I had actually been told that once.
Mm-hmm.
Once I started like actually going through the process. So Varad wasn't, my youngest wasn't quite two. And I was walking with a close friend, somebody who I had met just a couple years before, and we became close pretty quickly. But, you know, I mean, there were certainly plenty of things that I didn't know about her. And she asked me how I was feeling about turning 36. Like, well, funny you should ask. Like, I've always, you know, wanted to be a surrogate. And she almost fell over. Mm. Because they had been looking and stopped looking. And that's kind of her story, you know, for her to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that I realized was that there are so many people who are out there that we don't even know their stories. And
yeah.
there's so much that goes into infertility that like just doesn't get talked about, or pregnancy loss, or both. And so that kind of started the process because I learned that they had been looking for a surrogate and then they stopped because it for various reasons.
How does that conversation go down? You're like, oh, I've always wanted to be a surrogate. And she's like, that's crazy because we've always wanted a surrogate. Was it that fast? I mean, I can imagine she literally almost fell over because it was like a prayer was being answered in this crazy way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so she told me her story that, you know, I didn't know at all. And she is the type of person to be really open to, you know, not have any like expectations, but just to share. And I think, you know, then we were very open to the fact that like we wanted, that Sam and I wanted to explore how we were going to start this journey.
And just to be clear, Sam's your husband.
Yeah, Sam's my husband. Mm-hmm. So we did all of this together. And so we wanted to think about kind of all the different ways that we could, that like all the different ways that you can be a surrogate, right? And the different people who would be the parents. Would it be for a family member? Would it be for close friends? You know, would it be for, you know, a friend who, you know, he and his husband, a gay couple, they like live up in Oregon, you know, there would be like sort of a distance.
So were you going through people you knew that might need the help just in terms of who can we reach out to?
Yeah. So we were going through people we knew. And then kind of once we started there, we're like, okay, well, this is an altruistic or compassionate journey.
And that means you didn't do it. It's a hard way to say. You say probably say it better than I will. I don't want to say you didn't get paid to do it. You didn't really get paid to do it, but you did get your expenses reimbursed, right? So versus going through an agency where you get like a commission on top of your expenses.
Yeah. And I mean, another way to put it would just be that it's an independent journey. It's independent of an agency. But I looked into agencies also because I wanted to know like what the process was and what would be the advantages of going with an agency over doing it completely independently. Because there are so many things to consider, you know, and it can be kind of overwhelming.
So you had met with the agencies before deciding for sure that you were going to do altruistic or while you were still sort of deciding?
Yeah, I talked to a couple different people at agencies while we were still deciding, which was also really helpful. We had pretty much decided that we wanted to go to do it independently. But I know just from being like in my Facebook groups and talking to different people that there are a lot of people that have done it with agencies and were so happy doing it that way. Because it's not, I mean, obviously, I think the advantage of going with an agency is not about the compensation. It's about all the
protections, sure,
that you have and the matching process.
Right. You kind of remove yourself as the person involved physically from that process.
Yeah.
So let me just ask you this. In the altruistic path without the agency, what protections did you still need to get maintained for yourself? Obviously a lawyer. Who decides what doctor or clinic you're going to go to? I know that with agencies, there are things like maternity leave gets covered sometimes, or maternity clothing, or childcare for your kids. Right. Were those all things you knew about and were able to include, or did you decide you didn't want to include them? How did that work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we both had lawyers, and the parents paid for our lawyer. And then we had a contract that was drawn up, and both of the lawyers specialize in family law. So they were very aware of all of those details and some things that I hadn't even thought of. And so all those things were worked out just like you would in an agency in the very, very beginning before we even started anything. And so, yeah, things like any clothing, my any kind of lost wages. It's not a maternity leave, but you know, according to like the state, it's
right.
a maternity leave. It's like disability leave.
Right.
And you know, if there was any kind of like compensation, that all those details were put in the contract in terms of like the monetary stuff. And then there were other things like, you know, things that we had to decide.
In terms of like the pregnancy, the journey of the pregnancy, if something, God forbid, happened.
Right, exactly. Like what kind of terms there would be in terms of like terminating the pregnancy, all those details that you would normally have in the contract. And what else in terms of like going independent? We had an escrow account also. So that was really helpful because then there's no, again, like you take like the monetary and all the legal stuff is taken out of the equation for the most part.
Yeah.
And then the focus is really on the process itself. Because there's a lot that goes into that. And if you can take out the legalities and the monetary stuff, like during the journey,
yeah,
then it's so much easier.
And did the family have embryos already made or did they have to go through that process all over?
They had to go through that.
They had to start fresh. Okay. So that's like the stakes are even higher in some ways because like you've done all this paperwork, you've made all these decisions and like, what if, God forbid, it doesn't even get to that point? Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you were like there with them while they were going through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were there while they were going through that process.
And were you like, were they updating you or were you kind of holding your distance?
No, they were updating us. There was a lot of open communication between us, which was incredible. And we kind of like laid out sort of the ground rules for communication and that was really helpful. And I think some of that was to like protect the process and some of it was to hopefully protect our friendship because, you know, you're kind of putting that on the line.
Definitely.
And so that was something we were making sure that we were like communicating, but yeah, we were going through that process kind of with them.
Here's the thing. Not all prenatals are created equal. We know this. I love the brand WeNatal. They are revolutionizing the fertility space and have created the cleanest, most comprehensive prenatal formulas for both men and women. I wish I had had them when I was trying to conceive. Unlike most prenatals on the market that only have 12 key nutrients, WeNatal contains 24 at research-backed amounts that have been proven by science to support fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum health. And the best part is they get all of this nutrient density of 8 capsules, 24 nutrients into 3 capsules per day. Y'all know I'm way past prenatal time and I'm way past postpartum time. My kids are 5 and I still take this prenatal every day. It's formulated by top doctors and nutritionists, including Dr. Mark Hyman and Kelly Levesque. And of course, they're giving my listeners an incredible offer, which you will not find on any other podcast anywhere. A free 30-day supply of their Omega DHA and fish oil, a $34.95 value. This is a huge boost for both egg and sperm quality with the purchase of any subscription. So you go to WeNatal.com/fertilitychick and grab your freebie there. I cannot wait for you guys to try it. You're going to feel so good every day. How were your children dealing with this? How did you handle this? You had 3 children at the time. I think they were like 2, 7, and 9 or 2, 6, and 8,
they
something.
Were. 3, 6, and 9.
Yeah, 3, 6, and 9. And how did you even, like, did you tell them before you were actually pregnant or did you wait?
So we kind of went back and forth. And it's funny, I had to remind myself about what we did and how we told them. I know that you read my blog, which I started. And I'm really, really happy that I did because that was actually really helpful to even like for this to go back and like remind myself, oh yeah, that's what I did. So yeah, so we decided to wait to tell the kids when sort of that like first, you know, 12, 13 weeks of, you know, the unknowns, that like beginning trimester, that first trimester was passed. And then we just laid it all out very matter-of-factly and we talked about how we were really excited to help another family, and they obviously knew our friends.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody that our, so it ends up, I don't know if I like have said this already, but it ends up that we went into the journey with the friend who I was walking with in the
Yes.
Arboretum, and they already had a daughter, which they were, you know, incredibly lucky to have for various reasons. And so their daughter and my middle daughter, Penina, were very, very close, and they were all really close to her. And so we said, you know, wouldn't it be so great if your friend could have a sibling just like you have each other? And they're like, yeah, that would be great. Well,
we're gonna give it to them.
Yeah. Like, you get to do that. Like,
wow.
You basically get to give them a sibling. We get to give them a sibling. But the baby won't be ours. The baby will be basically created by the doctors and then housed in my uterus for 9 months. And then we'll give the baby back. And so I talk about this like lasagna metaphor.
Yes, which I love. Can you share it?
Yeah. So we talked about how, just like a lasagna, you have to put all these different ingredients in, and that's how the baby was going to be created, essentially, by our friends. The dad will give his sperm and the mom will give her egg, and they'll put it together. The doctors will put it together and they will create an embryo. And we really like to use like the scientific terms as much as we could. And they'll create an embryo, and then they'll have to do a procedure where they put the embryo into my uterus. And I will be like the oven, like the lasagna. They made the lasagna and they gave me the lasagna to cook in my oven. And then once it's cooked and it's all ready, we'll give the lasagna back to them. And so that's basically how we explained it.
Did they have any questions, or did they pretty much get it?
They pretty much got it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they kind of wanted to know like the timeline of things and like how the baby's going to be born, like sort of like normal questions that you'd get from a kid whose, you know, parent is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But they never asked anything about like, you know, will we get to keep the baby or anything like that. There really wasn't any confusion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the kids kind of like wanted to take care of me. They came to doctor's appointments with me.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And all the doctor's appointments were with the parents and sometimes even with the sister.
So it'd be like eight of you in the room.
Yes.
Doing an ultrasound.
Yep.
Wow.
That was always a bit of a negotiation.
Yeah. Of course.
Even when we would like prep the doctors or we prepped the hospital, I mean, they spent like so much time preparing the hospital. Like, this is what it's going to be. And we, as the parents, want to be in the room while she's giving birth. And even still, they were like, sorry, you can only have two people in the room. We're like, no.
We've already talked about this.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be in the room. Everybody's going to be in the doctor's office. Everybody's going to come to the ultrasound, including my husband, because I needed his support.
Yeah.
I just needed him like by my side.
Oh, that's such a good way to put it. I don't think that gets talked about enough too. I mean, that you needed that support, because I feel like you were so headstrong on knowing you wanted to do this. You forged forward. You had the amazing support of your husband, who also was in on the journey with you. But I think we think so much of the couple who was struggling and how much support they must have needed, and not necessarily about the support that you needed as the carrier.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the support that I needed was like just to kind of cheer me on and give me the confidence and like just kind of like, and still be my partner.
Mm-hmm.
Just like knowing that he was my partner in all of this was huge, you know.
Yeah.
And then he also, like, he needed support. Like, he was doing so much too when if he wasn't at a doctor's appointment with me, then he was taking care of our own kids.
Right. And you gave birth at a certain point and then still needed taking care, like postpartum care, but didn't have the newborn at home.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, a lot of what we don't talk about, what that feels like, you know, and you, that was your fourth time. So I'm curious, four postpartums, did this one feel different? Were you more energized because you weren't also taking care of a newborn? Or did it feel sort of the same?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's such a good thing to think about. And it was different and the same. So I definitely felt like there was this loss, sort of like an emptiness, not a loss of like not having that child, having the, you know, the sorrow babe with me. It was just that I had been caring for this being and had this like relationship with this family for so long. And then, you know, just like, just physically giving birth and then there being this emptiness really did, it felt very different. And that was hard. And then like my kids came into the room, you know, and then I could be filled up again.
Yeah. Did you see the baby?
It was momentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see the baby soon after they were born?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like a visit.
Yes. So, right. I mean, I did see the baby when he
of
came
course,
out.
Yeah.
He went straight to the mom. And then I held him a little bit before they left to their room and we had our own room. And then I think it was like maybe that night or the next day when we were still in the hospital, that's when I went over to visit.
Nice.
I went to visit their room. And that was really sweet. You know, really, really sweet. It's like, I mean, I can't even describe it. It's like beyond sweet.
Yeah. I can't even try to imagine it, to be honest. The feelings, the hormones, your body post-birth and knowing that you've done this incredible miracle. And I'm sure watching the faces of your daughter's best friend, right? The sister of this baby and these parents who like, but a chance walk at the Arboretum, their whole life changed. All of your lives changed, really.
Yeah, all of it. I mean, it's so true. It's not easy. There was, like you said, like there's still so many hormones that are kind of going crazy and there's no like little being to kind of like
balance
sort of
those hormones.
Have it all balance it out and make sense. And then there's like this surge of joy and just incredible emotion seeing our friends with their baby. And, you know, the sister is so happy. And I mean, we were lucky. We got to spend a lot of time with them when, you know, when it made sense, you know, because they had a newborn. So when I was home, I still had to recover because I still had a physical, you know, there was still the physical recovery of having given birth. And then my milk came in and we made the decision to, I had already decided that I was going to pump.
Was that decided in the contract at the beginning?
That was decided in the contract. But if I, you know, decided that I didn't want to, there was no
routes,
like strings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have an out, but pumping, that was definitely different. I pumped with my others, but I had never exclusively pumped. And I have a newfound appreciation and for all those who do that exclusive pumping, because that was really, really challenging.
It can feel like a full-time job, honestly.
Yeah, it was very cow-like.
Yeah.
I mean,
totally.
And then, you know, waking up, I had to wake up at like 4 a.m. to pump because I would be engorged. And so I had all of like the, all the stuff that I'd had in postpartum with my newborn, the cabbage leaves and the teas and, you know, all the stuff and the cold packs and the hot packs and yeah. all that stuff. So that, you know, that was definitely challenging, but it was also like, you know, it was also very gratifying, you know?
Did it feel like, were you like mission accomplished? Like, this is what I wanted. And it turned out how I wanted it.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I had to go through a little bit of an acceptance that this was my one and only journey. Mm-hmm. And I mean, partly because a lot of people do more than one.
I know.
And it's amazing. And it's not like I felt like my body wasn't working anymore. It did everything that it, I mean, it produced milk when I had no newborn attached to my chest,
mm-hmm.
which is just unbelievable. But I also was kind of looking forward to having my body back.
Yes.
And refocusing on my family, because it did like take away from things.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a huge, it was such a huge like lesson and learning process and mitzvah.
Yeah.
An incredible deed, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you provided a miracle.
Thing,
yeah.
Gift that we could give as a family. And I think my kids learned so much from that.
You mentioned you're still in a lot of the gestational carrier Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And so it's still very much on your radar, right? Like you're still, do you feel like it's as much a part of your identity moving forward? Like, will it forever be part of who you are? I think postpartum, we are struggling sometimes or working as mothers to regain who we are, right? Like our identity, who am I after one kid? Who am I after two kids? If that's the blessing, who am I after three? And so rediscovering who you are after you're not only your fourth, but to give that baby to another family. Like, I think that that must have felt, I don't know, what did it feel different? Did you feel like you had to work harder? And do you think you would have been plugged into maybe the maternal community as much if you hadn't done this huge miracle?
Yeah, I think that my identity and my life path changed.
Mm.
I think just definitely being connected to surrogate community and continually hearing stories, I think there's a different sort of empathy and like connection to not just people who are surrogates, but people who are going through their own pregnancy and family journeys. And not that I've experienced it, and so I, you know, I can't like take on any of that kind of experience, but I kind of hope that there's more of, I don't know, a bridge or...
Well, obviously you wouldn't have been connected to the surrogacy community had you not been a surrogate, but yeah. The fact that you're still tuned in and it's still on your radar, and that it probably will be forever in terms of finding out your identity post being a surrogate. So in terms of finding our identity as mothers postpartum and what that journey is, because it can be work, I'm curious how it felt as a surrogate versus when it was your own children, and knowing that you're still connected to the surrogate community, how did that feel in terms of your identity?
So I think, you know, it's such like a complicated, identity can be so complicated, especially as mothers and all of the different roles that we play as moms and parents. But I think I've learned so much, which has also changed my identity, I guess. And I think like one of the like more internal things that I've learned is that I have the capacity, and we as parents have the capacity to do pretty remarkable things. And this was the other thing that I think I've realized, is that there are a lot of people out there doing pretty selfless, miraculous things for other people.
Mm.
And I think especially now with so many really hard things happening in the world, it's such a good reminder. And we have to be able to see the good in people. And there are so many people that are doing, that are becoming surrogates and doing other like pretty remarkable things that just bring so much joy and love to other people. And then in turn, they bring that into their own lives and into their own families.
So funny.
And I think
what comes to mind, I just have to tell you, because this is so ridiculous, is like, you know, when you're driving, if someone gives you the right of way, like the rest of the day, you give everyone else the right of way because you're right. And I'm like, this is such a bigger scale, but that's what it feels like.
It's so true. It's like contagious.
Yeah.
You know? And people would say to me like, wow, I don't think I could ever do that. And I'm like, well, I mean, maybe you could, or maybe you couldn't do this, but you could do something else. You know, like, what do you have that you could do? Sorry, I'm going to cry.
Good. That's my goal, is to get everyone to cry. This is perfect.
You know, and I think some people, when they would say that, they're like, well, I don't think I could ever like give the baby back. I would hear that a lot. I'm like, well, you know, in this case, like the baby was never mine to begin with. And then there was like this, for most people, there was like this window that opened, I think. And so I think the other thing that I came to realize was that like we also have a role to teach and educate and come and do that, like come from love when we do that. You know, that when I was asked these questions, it wasn't out of any kind of like malicious anything or, you know, hurt, or there was no like bad intention. And so just giving people the benefit of the doubt.
I think that's so important.
It's huge.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes, but I think the benefit of the doubt, and I like the way you said it, that just assume they're coming with love, which is hard. But I think it's sometimes the reminder we need every day when we're interacting.
Yeah. And maybe they're not. But I think if we start with it, then maybe there's a chance that they'll find that too. You know?
I love that. I feel like this is the perfect way to wrap up and just say thank you for sharing your journey. It's so powerful. And I think also, as it's getting easier to talk about, certain facets of it are, but I don't think we often hear from the gestational carrier herself. And so just really grateful that you were willing to open up with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking and for having me on.
You are amazing. You're an amazing human.
You are amazing.
I want to remind you of something before we talk about this episode. If you are really fired up about what is happening in Alabama and what is then poised to happen everywhere else in this country, please join me with Resolve, the National Fertility Association, in Advocacy Day, where we will lobby and give reasons to politicians, senators, congresspeople about why there needs to be protection for IVF and infertility treatment. DM me if you're interested. I'd love to have you on my team. We especially need people in states where there's nobody right now representing this voice. Places like Alabama, Wyoming, Alaska, I think Missouri is on the list. A lot of states that really need the support, and we cannot talk to the congresspeople without registered voters in these states jumping on board. Please join me. I would love to have you on my team. In the meantime, Rachel, thank you so much. What a lucky family to have had this beautiful miracle experience. Life is just so crazy sometimes. Please feel free to remember to send any questions my way and rate, review, love, and follow Abby Feeder on Instagram, The Fertility Chick on Instagram, and In Circle Fertility on Instagram. See you next week.